This is episode 290 of Jumble Think.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumble Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. Our guest on today's show is Aaron Price. More about Aaron in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to JumbleThink, just do it right now. You can go on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts, search for JumbleThink, and click subscribe. You can find us on places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and more. Now let's jump into today's conversation with Aaron Price. Hey there, welcome to Jumble Think. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a great show lined up for you today with Aaron Price. Before we get into that, if you missed last week's show with LeVar Burton, you really need to go check it out. It was a killer episode. We talked about Reading Rainbow, we talked about storytelling, we talked about roots, we talked about Star Trek, we talked about a lot of various topics, and you're not going to want to miss that episode. So if you're listening today and you missed that show, make sure you check us out wherever you listen to podcasts and check out our last episode with LeVar Burton. Today's show, though, is with Aaron Price. This is a super fun conversation. Who is Aaron Price? Well, Aaron is the president and CEO of the New Jersey Tech Council. He's also the founder of Propelify. I know him from doing interviews at Podcast Row. If you checked out last season, you're going to hear lots of episodes from that event. Now, Propelify, which he founded, is this killer innovation festival. It empowers the community of innovators who take action. They launched Propelify Innovation Festival in 2016 as a way to inspire the tech and innovation communities. This last September, I got to go and be a part of the event as a podcaster, meeting innovators and inventors and tech founders to hear their story. But I wanted you to hear the story behind Propelify. Hear the story of what's happening with New Jersey Tech Council and how they're redefining how people look at New Jersey. And we talk about a lot of entrepreneur stuff, small business ideas, super fun conversation. So let's go ahead and jump into our conversation with today's guest, Aaron Price. Our guest today is Aaron Price. Aaron, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
I first met you, as you know, as our listeners don't, through Podcast Row up in Manhattan, doing an event called Podcast Row, of course, and got to stand outside the comedy club and talk to you for a while on the streets and just really fascinated about what you're creating, what you're doing. Tell us, and our listeners, of course, you are a guy who wears many hats. What are some of those hats?
I am now by accident, but okay. for the past several years, I've been very intensely focused on building Propelify. Mm-hmm. And we're best known for our annual innovation festival to really be a best in class event to bring together the entrepreneurial and innovation community. Over the summer, around when the time I met you, the Propelify was acquired by the New Jersey Tech Council.
Wow.
And that has brought on many more hats because I'm really thinking about how does this council serve its clientele? What are we known for? What do we need to be doing going forward? How does Propelify fit in? What's the makeup of the organization? And so that has added a lot of complexities to what was, for a while, a lot of intense focus.
Not only is Propelify part of New Jersey Tech Council, but you actually run the New Jersey Tech Council now, too?
I do. As part of the deal, I came on as CEO of the Tech Council. And you know, the council has a really great history of empowering the innovation community in New Jersey. It's a 23-year-old organization.
Is it a government organization? Is it a...
It is not.
Okay.
It's a totally privately funded organization. It happens to have a venture fund that it helped start. I think it was 13 years ago, and that's been very successful, which also was something I found very attractive because I'm interested in that, in more of that. And it does the council's been great at helping provide networking and mentorship. Lots of events. It just hasn't been as focused on the entrepreneurial and startup community. With Propelify, I'm very focused on the entrepreneurial and startup community. And so as the board here has been was thinking about its future, and an opportunity came up for us to join forces, we all agreed it just made a lot of sense. And yeah. So I'm really psyched. There's a lot of resources. There's a really interesting, powerful corporate board that wasn't, they're very different than the kinds of people that I was around with Propelify. So it's been great.
As you've created Propelify, you were mentioning there that Propelify, of course, the innovation festival is kind of the core, but you're doing some other stuff too.
I am. Yeah. With Propelify, we put together other smaller events throughout the year. We helped launch a TV show with National Geographic called Valley of the Boom.
Yeah.
Which was kind of an unusual thing to get involved with, but made a lot of sense because it was about the 90s internet culture and they wanted to promote it to the startup community and around the country, which we helped do. We've had a book club. We do online webinar content. We've taken our talks and turned them into podcasts and things like that, but we're really rooted around helping empower the innovation community. And then, by accident, I've become sort of an accidental champion of technology in New Jersey, and it's opened up all sorts of doors with, the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the governor's office. So there's other things that have come up that I never really imagined would be part of my career that now are much more tied, I'm much more interested in and make a lot more sense for, the professional life.
Now, you know that JumbleThink, of course, is all about innovation and idea formation and around helping people take those dreams and ideas into becoming reality. I want to step back because you've created all this cool stuff, and now you're stepping into a new season with New Jersey Tech Council. Where did all of this passion for startups, innovation, for ideas start for you? Where did that spark really happen? And you go, this is the direction I want to go.
I'm going to answer that question in a second because you're reminding me of an important part of why Propelify is called Propelify, which is I believe ideas are very easy. It's that you have to propel them into reality and maintain that forward momentum to really make them successful.
And do you even use the tagline, idle ideas don't fly?
That's right. Idle ideas don't fly. If you think, I think the metaphors are plentiful, but if you think about the airplane fuselage sitting on the runway, that's an idea.
Yeah.
But without the team and not just the pilot, but the whole team flying that plane, it literally goes nowhere. And I think that's very much like a good idea. There are a lot of great ideas out there, but without propelling them into reality, they just don't happen on their own. And I'm sure many of your listeners have an idea for the next, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, etc. Or maybe they don't, but I'm sure they're thinking about it. And without actually trying, I've met a lot of people who have ideas but don't, they keep them close to the chest. They don't want to talk about it. They're not really working on them. And I think the opposite is the truth for what makes for a growing business.
Completely agree with that. We say isolation is the death march of entrepreneurship. That's one of our big mantras in that the more you isolate, the more unrealistic those ideas are to come into fruition, to happen.
I hadn't crystallized it as nicely as you just did, but that is exactly the truth. I got into this whole thing because my career as a technology person and technology entrepreneur has been very isolating.
Yeah.
So I this was 10 years ago. I was in the New York area. I live in Hoboken, New Jersey. Went to an event in New York when there were very, very few. And it was the first time I felt like I was really in the room with people who kind of saw the world like I did and wanted to help each other out. And so I thought, well, maybe I should start something like this in New Jersey. And I started the New Jersey Tech Meetup. It was just a side project. It wasn't a company. And the first month we had 80 people and then 120 and then 150. And it's still to this day the largest technology entrepreneurial community in the state, 7,500 members.
Wow.
And it solved that need, that problem you just described of isolation. It kept me moving forward no matter what was going on with my own business outside of that event or that side of that community. It was a highlight every single month. So, and I built an amazing network from that meetup. So, yeah, isolation is I agree with you, is the death march for entrepreneurship.
Now, you mentioned there that you've had your own struggles with running your business and feeling that isolation. You go to that New York event, you start feeling tapped into other people who think like you. And I get that feeling because there are times where you go out to an event and you talk to people, or you are talking to your friends and family over a holiday or a sporting game or something, and they just kind of gloss over and look at you and they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I get that whole... A good friend of mine says only kings and queens know what kings and queens know, meaning that unless you've experienced it, you don't get it. I want to talk about those early years of entrepreneurship for yourself. What did that look like? What drew you to entrepreneurship? Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Oh, yeah. I skipped your second question.
Oh, that's fine.
Your original question. I think there's a bit of what I was originally after was total time and financial freedom and flexibility. And I would say that I think entrepreneurship really is there's a false promise around, certainly you can create financial freedom for yourself.
Yeah.
If you're lucky and reasonably good. But the idea of total flexibility with your time, I think is a bit of a false promise. Because I find for me, I never really turn off. I'm constantly thinking about my business and what I can do to grow it and sort of just taking on all of the issues that arise when, you know, when you're the business owner. And so my brother and I patented a weightlifting device in high school. And that was really my first attempt at a real business. I was always the guy with the snow shoveling and lemonade stand side hustles, but that was our first real thing.
So it's been a part of your core since you can remember, that you were trying to find those things that you could create to generate revenue.
Absolutely. Okay. It's just been in me. Yeah. That's not to say that I think people can't develop that skill, but for me, it was definitely something that was part of my DNA.
Okay.
And so in college, I started an online food ordering business, what people know as like a Grubhub or a Seamless today. Unfortunately, without quite the same financial success that they had, but we did well.
Is it a success, or is there just a lot of VC money propping up some of those unicorns right now?
That's a good question. I mean, those companies do generate real revenue.
Yes.
So I do think they are legitimately successful. They are doing it. There's a debate as to the ethics of how much that they are leeching off of the local restaurant businesses whose margins are very thin.
Right.
And can't really afford it, but have no choice but to participate.
Yeah.
I mean, which was part of the problem that we had when I started what was called Deliver You. We took 10% of the order online, and we were on a college campus. I was doing this while I was in school. Our average order was $12. And so we made, I actually think we started with 5%, then we bumped it to 10. So originally we were making about 60 cents an order. We got to $1.20. But, you know, you need insane volume to make that really work.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Seamless started on the corporate side of the equation. I think that Jason Finger worked with a law firm. He's the founder of Seamless. And all the attorneys were ordering late night. And he thought, you know, he saw how painful it was to do that, like paper menus and walking around the office, and said to the firm, if I were to build you a system and make it so we can just do this all online as a group, would you give me 20% of each order? And they're like, yeah, that would save us hours. I mean, you know, at the billing rates of these guys, that was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And then he went to, and I might have some of the details a little off, but this is my understanding of the summary of the story. He went to the local restaurants and said, you know, I now represent the buying power of, I'm not sure which firm it was, but XYZ law firm. And if you want to participate, we're going to take 20% of the order. So now he had 40%, 20 on both sides. And, you know, that worked really well for them.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was a big lesson in understanding the model and how it scales and sustainability. If we had raised VC capital at the time, which we turned away.
That's a hard decision when you're in that, because I get that. With some of the tech startups that I've worked with in Northern California, you get to those questions sometimes of like, if we bootstrap this, we can make more money, have the potential for bigger returns. And if we don't, then we lose some of our passion, our DNA, our fingerprint on what we're creating. And it's this weird shuffle of like what's right for each founder, each entrepreneur.
Yeah. I mean, it's a struggle to or a delicate balance of how much control will you give up versus how much can you accelerate the growth of the business.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if you end up with the right levers on the right side of that equation, I think it makes a lot of sense. But there, I would also say there's an over glamorization around raising capital.
Yeah.
I understand why that's the case. It's certainly in many ways an important step for many companies on the way to success, but it is not the definition of success.
Right.
You know, CIEC WeWork in the news.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. We had a professor who had been burned on a VC deal, which we didn't know at the time. So, whatever you do, don't raise any money from these guys. We actually really would have benefited from the knowledge that I think would have come along with the capital.
Yeah.
Things may have been very different, but we really didn't know what we were doing.
So you do that. That kind of fizzles because of those choices of VC and Groupon coming along, you know, other Grubhub, and some of these other solutions. What was kind of that next pivot in business that you made?
Well, I started another business.
Okay.
I started selling things online to just make some money on the side. And my uncle, who's like a weekend Harley Davidson rider, had a garage full of parts that he's always tinkling with. That's not the right word. He's definitely not tinkling with the parts.
Tinkering
with the parts. And you know how our Harley guys like to tinkle.
Yeah.
He's tinkering with the bikes a lot. And so he said, you know, I got a garage full of all this stuff I've been messing with over the years. Why don't you sell it on eBay and see what happens? And so it was like 3 hours on a Sunday of listing all this stuff. And then a week later, I made like $2,000.
Wow.
And I thought like, wow, maybe there's something really here.
Yeah.
And so I started another business called Moto Recycle.
Okay.
Which ultimately turned into another business called eFordables, where we sold excess inventory for retailers. And it started primarily with these motorcycle parts. I'd go to Harley dealerships and ask them for their what are called takeoff parts that they service from the bikes. Often times they would service a bike, even if it was damaged, and retain the part. They'd say to the customer, do you want to keep this stuff? The customer is usually like, nah, what am I going to do with that? And so, it is not anymore, but at the time, it was not uncommon to find a massive, warehouse, a very, very large garage filled with parts that they had taken off of bikes that were brand new or damaged that they knew had a resale value, but they weren't allowed to sell in the store.
Wow.
And so we took them on consignment, sold them all as is, like kind of built this assembly line style inventory system where we would write a description, the condition, take a photo, pack, the item so it was ready to go out and sell it as is. And then we went 50-50 with the dealer on whatever it sold for. So we had no risk in the inventory. It was a great business. Ended up selling that to a group of local, like private investors who wanted to get into e-commerce. So that was, that worked out well. But that was a really interesting experience and, learning a lot about what's called B stock inventory and sales channels and online, a lot of the e-commerce market. It was a really fun time and challenging.
You are the typical entrepreneur, always thinking, always coming up with new ideas, seeing potential, seeing what others are missing along that journey. How do you process the ideas that you go, this is worth going for? This one's not, because you have to make those decisions of where you're going to invest the time, the resources, the energy that you're going to need to do to set these businesses up for success.
Yeah. Now I am much more thoughtful about these things. When I was younger, I think I just kind of went with it. I would even say that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't thinking about is this a business I want to be in? Can this get big enough to be? How big does it get? And does it become the size that I want it to be at the moment?
Mm-hmm.
I think in particular, is this the business I want to be in question is a really important one. So there were other things after this that I think I looked at that I started opportunistically that were not really the kinds of businesses I wanted to be in. There was one where it really didn't have a big enough addressable market. And so I learned that kind of the hard way that just no matter what we did, it wasn't going to get big enough. So, you know, now what I do is as much, I mean, the tools that exist today are much different. You can have an idea, get consumer feedback really quickly to make a more informed decision. And sometimes that customer feedback is not always perfect. And sometimes you decide to do it even in spite of that feedback, but you can do it knowing the challenges ahead. And if I were to do it again, there would definitely be things I would do differently.
As we move towards the end of this first segment, we always ask the final three questions. The first one being, how are you finding purpose in what you do?
I find purpose in what I do based on how impactful we can be in other people's lives and other people's, you know, building of businesses. That's kind of the industry I've come into. And so when people send me notes about how they've met incredible connections, so they've gotten jobs, there's a lot of people who come to our events and quit their jobs and started businesses. To me, those things are very much the driving force where I find purpose.
What is one challenge you're currently working to overcome?
I'm currently working to overcome the challenge of making sure we have the right team and what the makeup of the team should be. And that's just enormously on my mind as far as what this organization should look like and what the best case people, you know, if we had a team that was total ninjas, what would we look like versus, you know, and what's the team I have now and what's the right way for me to build, recruit, change things based on what's here.
What's the next big dream or idea you have that you're excited about?
I don't know how big it is, but something that I really am psyched about is something called the Startup Summer House.
Okay.
And so what I'd like to do with the Startup Summer House, I want to highlight, again, I mentioned becoming like the accidental champion of the New Jersey tech community. And so in Hoboken, which for your listeners who don't know the area, New York City is the backdrop of Hoboken. So it's this, we do a large event outside that's festive in nature, but a business conference. It's a lot of fun. And we leverage this really great geography of New Jersey to do it. And we get people from all around the world, mostly from New York and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Another real strength in New Jersey is the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have the best reputation always. And so what I'd like to do is change that narrative and rent a ridiculous house on the water for a month. Each week of that month, invite in founders to apply to be part of basically a mini accelerator where we focus on helping them build their businesses. They move into the house Monday through Thursday. On Friday is a demo day where we invite in the public to come see these companies. And then we produce the whole thing as a web show so that people can see behind the scenes of what really goes on as people are working on building their businesses and how difficult it can be. And so we can show New Jersey in a much stronger light. I think we can attract some great companies. We have a lot of fun doing it. We can bring the right corporates to the table. So that's currently, you know, I don't know if it's a big dream, but it's definitely, the odds are slightly against us on this one. So I'm hoping we can pull it off.
Hey, maybe it can be the next MTV reboot. Jersey Shore the right way.
Jersey Shore without Snooki.
And a lot less self-tanning.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It may not be quite as entertaining.
Yeah. That's for sure. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Propelify. We're going to talk about the future of app versus experience and much, much more. In a moment, we'll continue this conversation with Aaron Price. But before we do that, there is a lot going on at JumbleThink, and we want to keep you in the loop. We want to let you know about upcoming guests. We want to let you know about upcoming events and some other really exciting things we're working on. The best way to do that is to head on over to jumblethink.com where you can sign up for our newsletter. You can also find links to our social media pages like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So head on over to jumblethink.com. Let's connect and let's do this journey of chasing big ideas and dreams together. Now let's continue the conversation with Aaron Price. We are back with Aaron Price and going more into this conversation. Before we dive in and go further, we need to let people know how they can find and connect with what you're building and what you're doing.
So on Twitter, I'm AP Startup, and they can go to njtc.org. By the time this airs, we should have a new, somewhat fancier, I wouldn't say fancy, but fancier website than we do now. So that'll be, then hopefully we'll hear from some people.
Super cool. And those links will be in the episode notes. Now, Propelify, I got to be a part of it this year with recording some interviews. We actually have, right around the time your episode's going live, a couple interviews that were recorded live at that event. So that's super cool. It was a really fun event. I wish it hadn't decided to go from summer to winter overnight and yeah. Rain and wind. It was kind of crazy. It's an outdoor event, but beautiful location. Cool event, two main tents and a lot of vendors and just a lot of cool conversations. Tell us a little bit about the origins of Propelify. The first event was, what, 2016? And so tell us a little bit about where that idea sparked from and the evolution of what you're building there.
So I mentioned before, I started the New Jersey Tech Meetup, and this event yeah. takes on kind of a life of its own. And it's grown into one of the most popular events in the region. We were bringing in some really great speakers. I was working on a different startup with someone, and he and I were not seeing eye to eye, and amicably and professionally decided to part ways. So I was thinking about what to do next. And so at the August 2015 New Jersey Tech Meetup, I was interviewing Gary Vee on stage. And, you know, he's dropping F-bombs and yelling at the crowd like he does. And he's just like, you know, people got to lean into their strengths and find something where they have just an unfair advantage. And we do this event in Hoboken at Stevens Institute of Technology that overlooks New York City and a lot of the landscape in New Jersey. And I had on my mind for a while the idea of doing something much, much bigger like the meetup, because it had just been kind of the thing that was doing the best business-wise in my life at the time.
Yeah.
And I had a good relationship with Hoboken and the mayor, and she had mentioned, you know, if you want to do something bigger, let me know. And I thought, you know, I'm ignoring the thing in my life that I think I am best at, which is driving community.
Yeah.
And you know, I've always been somebody who wants to introduce, oh, you got to meet this guy, you got to meet this girl. So it in retrospect, it's made a lot of sense that I came into this place. But it was after that meetup that I said, you know what, I'm going to go all in on this, build, you know, events and community business. I spoke to the city about, can I use Pier A in Hoboken, which is this giant park overlooking the city, and just went with it. In fact, approached Gary as a partner at the time, and we almost made a deal. It ended up not making sense, but he was one of our keynotes the first year, which was great. And so, you know, that's how it started, was, can I go all in? Is the timing right? Am I in the right position? Do I have an unfair advantage, which I think I did in the pier and if you're more traditionally, these kinds of things are started by media companies.
Right.
So for Inc. Magazine or Entrepreneur Magazine, a lot of times they don't have the same level of authenticity within the grassroots communities to drive these massive events in the first year. Certainly they can be enormously successful over time. And some can be enormously successful the first year. But I think my secret weapon here was I had built really good relationships with all these other meetup founders and all these other founder groups and CTO groups. So like all these grassroots level community groups that had some amazing people in them. And it's felt like they almost all rallied around, let's make this our event and all go. And they did.
Wow.
And the first year I thought we would have 3,000 attendees. We had 8,000 people show up.
Wow.
And it just kind of took on a life of its own from there.
In the title right there is Innovation Festival. Mm-hmm. What does innovation mean to you? How does that play out in our modern landscape?
What's funny is I hate the word innovation, but it's definitely just because I think it's massively overused. It's the right word for what we do. I just think it's lost a little bit of the edge that I feel like it really should mean. To me, it's about seeing things, finding a problem and coming up with a creative solution, applying something in a way it hasn't been applied before. And I really like when things happen kind of across industry, when you talk to like somebody who runs a pet care business and you think about, you know, and then you put them in the room with somebody that runs like a tech company and they talk about their struggles and how they solve problems. And sometimes they're like, well, we have, you know, some tool we have here works really well over here. And so the non-obvious connections I find really interesting. So to me, the ability to solve a problem in a creative way is the definition of innovation.
That's the heartbeat of what you're creating is innovation. And it's done through conversation and community, which I love. I love the fact that you kicked off the beginning of the interview. We talked about how isolation is really such a bad thing for creators, whether it's a thought leader, whether it's a tech founder, whether it's a traditional business founder. That isolation is so damaging to setting them up for that success.
Totally.
How are you taking that community? How are you seeing that community really be a catalyst for reconditioning people to think differently on how they engage with each other?
This is a great question, because I think a lot of it has to – I think one of the reasons that the Meetup and Propelify have been successful is because I've created environments where people who may not normally be natural networkers feel comfortable building relationships.
A place of safety.
That's right. And I didn't realize that I was doing that at the time, but again, I think this is why it's a strength of mine. I made it really clear that you were at our events to help each other. So we would do something called audience asks at the meetup, where you'd stand up and say, "Hi, my name is." It had to go in this format. We had this ad lib model on the screen.
Wow.
I can help you I'm looking for help with this, and I can help you with that. And I would absolutely call people out if they didn't have both. You know, obviously they had everybody has the ask, but if they didn't have the give, I made it really clear that that was the culture of this event, or this community. During the middle of the event, I'd have people, you know, sometimes it just gets kind of stale from sitting, even if it's great content, it's sitting for an hour. So I'd have people stand up and high five your neighbor, which became culturally a big part of what we do, but also subtly creates an opportunity for you to say hi to a stranger. Mm-hmm. And that's worked really, really well. And so I've really come to appreciate the need to be thoughtful about how do we create opportunities for people who may not love the idea of just walking up to a stranger and saying hello to do that. And yeah, that, you know, once you can get them to, you know, once they can basically say, "Well, Aaron made me say hello," it's very easy.
Yeah.
You know, but if it's got this, like, "I got to go say hi to a girl at the bar" feel to it, and I'm terrified, it's very intimidating. I think even people who are good at it, I think it's intimidating, but it's, you know, especially for people who aren't naturally good at that. And so we just try to create a culture in the event where it's easy to talk to other people, which sounds simple, but it's not such an easy thing to do.
No, it's really not. And I've been a part of some great networks out in California when we worked in high tech out there. It was amazing to see which ones flourished and which ones didn't, and the DNA behind that. And I found that you've addressed part one of the problem of community in the space of innovation, which is, of course, the idea of insecurity. I can't talk to these people. I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't even know what I'm supposed to ask, or I don't feel like I'm at a place to give something back. And I love that you married that solution. This is what I need, and this is how I can help you. And often a lot of early startup founders, a lot of early innovators, they get stuck in this place of saying, "I'm just that guy, and I don't have enough experience. I don't have enough knowledge. I don't have enough whatever to really help." So giving back is such a powerful tool in that gain process. People want to give to people who give. Yeah. How have you seen people shift? How have you seen them grow through that process of being vulnerable in their insecurities and saying, yeah, I do need this help? But then also, how has that power shifted their perception of themselves and what they have to give to the community? And I just think that model is beautiful. What have you seen? What is the fruit you've seen from individuals? Maybe a really kind of cool story or something.
I mean, I'll see if I can come up with a cool story, but in general, I've seen it create a lot of opportunity and a lot of friendships. And so, you know, there's a guy who now runs the Jersey City Tech Meetup who came for many years to my event, was inspired by, like, "Hey, why don't, you know, maybe I could try this in a neighboring town and build my own little community." And he's done a great job of doing that. And then another guy who came through the New Jersey Tech Meetup, as this guy in Jersey City was moving on, he was inspired by, you know, this idea of building community. And when the Jersey City Tech Meetup was looking for a new leader, I put the two of them in touch. And this guy, Ben, was like, "You know what? I never thought I'd be the guy to to be running an event like this, but it's been incredible. And now he, you know, he's taken the reins and built his own community from there. And they each obviously have their own sort of style. I mean, there was a high school kid who I met judging a startup competition who was a little bit shy and unsure of himself, but said he really wanted to get involved with the meetup and with Propelify. A lot of times I find those kinds of people, especially, you know, students don't follow up. He did. He got involved. He would drive like an hour and a half to our meetings, wow, like the meetups. He graduated high school, ended up going to Stevens, which is in Hoboken. He's on what we call our leadership team now with Propelify and does a lot there. I helped him get an internship over the summer. I mean, I've just seen so much. I think when people are willing to put themselves out there, you can't reverse engineer the outcomes. I posted today on LinkedIn about this. Like, sometimes you just do what you think is good for somebody else. You don't even have to have the ask. You just have the give. Inevitably, what goes around comes around. I find this to be really just like a rock solid truth. And so that's the kind of thing I've seen that in the community has happened, where people are interested in introducing somebody and they've raised capital and, you know, from investors they didn't think that they might meet. Certainly have made friends from people who they didn't know otherwise. So, you know, maybe it's not as buttoned up a story as maybe I was hoping to come up with, but you can really see it's uncomfortable to put yourself out there. And I am relatively comfortable with it, but I totally appreciate that it's not the most comfortable feeling. And I think that at least what we try to do with this community is make it a place where it's safe to do that. It's easy to do that. And people generally want to help one another, which is, I think, was why I'm so drawn to it.
I mentioned that there are two sides of this, of course, the insecurity side, but there's also an arrogant side. People coming in saying, I don't want to give my idea away. And you see this all the time with tech startups. I don't know how many NDAs I've had to sign now going into initial meetings as a developer and going, there's really nothing to protect here. Why are you so scared of sharing your ideas with people? And that's always really shocked me that people guard their ideas when the ideas really blossom well in those communities. And people aren't out just to go, hey, I'm going to steal this idea because it's a good idea. You just don't see it that often. How are you, or what are some suggestions that you would give to somebody who is struggling with that? And time and time again, I see those ideas never come to be because they're so scared of putting the idea out there that they never even launch. So what would you tell them about the arrogance of, my idea is too good, I've got to protect it, I've got to hoard it, I've got to guard it?
Yeah, I think it's crazy. Always the 1 + 1 = 3 mantra holds true. If somebody else with just your idea, it beats you in business, I think you kind of deserve to lose anyway. The chances that they want to run with your idea, are in a position to run with your idea, are actually able to be successful, are so enormously slim I feel like if you lose in that way, you kind of deserve to lose. Now, that's not, you know, there have been cases where people have legitimately stolen ideas. I don't want to diminish that.
Right.
But if you think about the risk game here, the risk reward game in particular, I think the likelihood of you getting more help in growing your business are like, you know, it's 95-5 kind of odds, or 99-1 kind of odds. Most people, I don't think, have any interest or ability to steal somebody else's idea. So I do think you absolutely should talk to people about it. You'll get good input. A lot of times those people will say, oh, you should talk to so-and-so. You should talk to so-and-so. You know, it creates this network effect of, oh, I hear this guy's working on something and you might be able to help him. And if you keep it to yourself, it's very easy to get lost in the bubble of how great your idea is, and then next thing you know, you're way off base on what the market wants, or maybe you've lost time and you haven't recruited good people. You've missed real opportunity. And so I'm not a fan generally of NDAs unless there's a real obvious need. If you're very directly competitive in some way, it slows things down. It can set the wrong tone of a relationship. It depends on who the person is. And I'm a very big fan of sharing ideas widely.
I know that you're doing really cool stuff with Propelify and through Propelify. Where do you see that event going?
Well, now that we're part of the Tech Council, I am thinking very broadly about what can we do that's great in New Jersey to raise the profile, but not just because it's New Jersey. Like, I want the New Jersey benefit to be the byproduct of just building some really great value for the client, you know, their clientele, which is our community. But I'm thinking about it as these are our clients and how are we serving them. And so I'd like to see Propelify continue to grow. I'd like to see it really turn into a world-class event. I mean, I think there's a lot that I'm proud of there, but I do believe there's plenty of room for opportunity for us to grow and certainly for us to elevate the experience. Is one of the reasons I decided to get involved with the Tech Council, is I wanted to make sure we could surround the brand with more resources. With the council, I want to build the best-in-class member offering in the country. There's a Tech Council in almost every state.
Yeah.
And I'd like us to really shake things up so people can't ignore the value that you get from being part of this council. So I want to build out a mentorship program, create a map where people can find one another, make sure that our fund gets lots of attention, and maybe help raise another fund, organize an angel network here in the state, you know, continue to work closely and more closely with the governor's office on a few initiatives. I just want to make sure that being in New Jersey is a little bit unique. We're in the shadow of New York.
Yeah.
And so some of these other markets don't have that sort of massive neighbor that steals most of the attention. And New York's fantastic. It's one of the reasons I'm in New Jersey. I just want to make sure that we are shining a bright enough light on what actually is happening here. And for people who are in the state and want to start a business, or where we can provide the right strategic value and value proposition for you to say, you know what, it makes sense for me to be there. That they're aware of what we have to offer. But like I said, you know, we do our event in Hoboken. It doesn't say New Jersey on it at all. It's like the New York Super Bowl actually happens at the Meadowlands in New Jersey.
Right.
We just want to build something best of class.
I spent years in Northern California working with Silicon Valley startups. Moved out. I'm from Pennsylvania. So moved back to Pennsylvania 4 years ago. And have an office in Midtown Manhattan, go up a couple times a month usually and do meetings up there with clients and with guests for the show and other things like that. I always took the Amtrak through or park in Newark and go in. And I get what you're saying about being in the shadow of New York and New Jersey maybe not getting the attention it deserves in some of that innovation. Going to Propelify, it really opens my eyes about the community as I talk to people who are from New Jersey that is there in the innovation space. It gave me a perspective of maybe I've overlooked New Jersey. In my mind, I think about going to, you know, the South Shores of New Jersey. I don't think highly of anything north of Atlantic City typically. And I think a lot of people have that reputation. So I want you to dispel for the next few minutes just about what it is that New Jersey really has to offer, not only the tech space, but the world at a broader stage, and how maybe we need to stop overlooking it and giving it this reputation of being not so great.
Well, I don't know if I can answer all, I don't know if I could get quite there, but here's what I can say. There are a lot of great people and companies and investors, you know, I'm thinking about it through a business lens, who live and work in New Jersey, and many of whom who live in New Jersey and work in New York.
Yeah.
And I've talked a lot about lately how, like, all the dots are here. No one's really connected them all. And so, I mean, I think that we've got a good lifestyle. I think if you depends on whether you like a city or a suburb, but I think a lot of geography is very appealing. I think we have the best school systems, you know, by ranking in the country. You know, now I'm giving you like governor's talking points, but at the end of the day, like it doesn't even matter that much to me. I just want to make sure that people realize. I think for me it was kind of like I'm tired of being made fun of as the Jersey guy.
Yeah.
And so while it's not like I'm like the number one Jersey guy on the planet, I do think I've seen firsthand really amazing businesses get built here and really incredible people. And now that I'm in the position of community building, I just want to make sure people are more aware. And then more specifically, from a business perspective, I'm talking a lot about a framework of collaboration, differentiation, and excellence as we build the Tech Council. And what that means is, I found there are a lot of business groups around the state, and there's a culture of kind of like everybody's got their own little fiefdom and leave them alone, and we don't get along great. We get along okay. I'd like to turn that upside down and make sure that we can collaborate more, that these communities can intersect quite a bit more. Differentiation is about figuring out where are we best and how do we complement what's going on in New York, not pretend we're competitive, because in many ways we're not. But for things like health tech and clean tech and sports betting technology, which has really interesting legislation that's made it a major force in New Jersey now, and a few other areas, fintech has a really strong community here, life sciences, I think we should lean into those strengths. I mean, I think something like 10 or 12 of the largest pharmaceuticals in the world are headquartered in New Jersey.
Right.
So we're going to be building out programming to make sure we can get startups in the door with those companies so we can say that, as a value prop to our clients, if you participate with the Tech Council, we'll get you in front of, maybe it's these kinds of people, the CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health and the C-suite at Johnson & Johnson and the people from Stryker. Like they're all here. And then whether you like New Jersey or not, you can't ignore that if you want to build a business in that vertical, you should show up. Mm. And that's where I want to see us, really thrive. That we're not begging people on their fundraising tours in the New York area to, swing across the river. That it's a smart move to surround yourself with these people because they're going to help you build a business faster.
Absolutely. It's made me rethink. I used to say when we'd have a guest on or I'd meet up with someone who's from New Jersey, I'd always say, oh, I'm sorry. But really seeing Jersey in a new light in the last year, I think part of that's by meeting you and being at Propelify. I think part of it is by realizing through other conversations I've had at other events just how many incredible people are there doing really innovative things and how it's a space that has the potential to really shake up some of the status quo of how we approach innovation, how we approach technology, how we approach some of the problems that we're facing. It needs to get some more credit and eyes on it to see it as it is, not as maybe historically people have perceived it as.
I don't think people realize, and I was one of those people who didn't realize, like Bell Labs invented the cell phone.
Yeah.
I was at this dinner last night with, I don't know if he's still the oldest Nobel laureate in the country, in the world, but he was among them. I think he was 94, a researcher from Bell Labs. I mean, a lot, and they're just one example of a bunch of the interesting things or interesting companies here. But that's a little more of an old school organization. Meanwhile, like Jet.com attacks the e-commerce industry and has a $3 billion exit in 2 years.
Wow.
I mean, which is obviously a New Jersey company.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in between. So I just, in the position that I'm in, I just want to make sure that we are connecting those people and telling those stories and playing nicely with New York. Like I said, big fan. But for people who are here, let's make sure that we can connect with the right people and help them grow.
So good. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we're doing rapid fire questions with Aaron Price. In today's conversation, we've talked to Aaron a lot about Propelify, which is a killer innovation festival. I was able to go to Propelify, sit down with a few people, including thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and startup founders, and even innovators about their journey of creating. One of those interviews is already live. That was with Jen Lederer. She is a comedian and has worked in the entertainment space for a long time. That is a great episode. If you want to get a feel for what Propelify was like, what the environment around us was like, you should go check it out. How do you check it out? Well, it was season 4, episode 287. You can head on over to jumblethink.com and check that out. But if you're a fan of Apple Podcasts, simply go to jumblethink.com/Apple Podcasts. And for Spotify, jumblethink.com/Spotify. It'll take you right to the show where you can check that out.
Now let's go ahead and jump into rapid fire questions with Aaron Price.
Levez seulement le bras pour mettre l'aiguille sur le disque. Mettez le contact.
We are back with Aaron Price for rapid fire questions. Aaron, are you ready?
I hope so.
I have our normal questions here. I'm going to throw in a wild card right at the top. When people think Hoboken, there are two names that usually come to mind: Frank Sinatra and Buddy the Cake Boss. Who's your favorite?
Oh, I like them both. I guess I'd have to go with Sinatra. I'd go with the classic.
Absolutely.
But I like Buddy.
Yeah. Good stuff. I stopped over at the bakery when I was at Propelify, and it's tasty.
I mean, I don't want to get us off track from our rapid fire questions, but if you think about like the modern content model building business, he's crushed it because of content.
He has. It doesn't
not,
get
the food is good, but that's not the, you know, that's it's, you know, we talked about Gary Vee earlier, like he's leveraged more traditional channels with TV, but he's come up with a really great content business.
We're going to pivot here and do our rapid fire question. The first one is, as a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, I never had that deep seated, like I got to be a whatever. I always wanted to have financial freedom. I don't know. You know, I've always liked technology. So I wanted to be an entrepreneur.
What is one tip you'd give someone with a big idea or dream and they don't know where to start?
How rapid in the rapid fire do we need these to be?
As long as you want it to be.
So the advice I would give them is to create a landing page to express the value proposition of whatever problem it solves. You can do that with lots of free tools. To buy an ad on Facebook targeting the specific potential market they think they're going to go after and see if they can convert potential customers, meaning create a landing page with this value prop and at the bottom either pre-sell the item or put an email box for people to subscribe to be like early customers or VIPs or some access to it and see if they can acquire customers to buy their product before it's even built and at what cost. And so once they find that out, can they do so in a way that's profitable if they actually had the product?
Love that. That is one of my favorite ways to actually test markets and test if people are interested in an idea or a message that you're trying to share. I'm so glad you shared that. What is one change you'd like to see in the world?
Reduction in gun violence. Like, full stop. You know, there was that shooting yesterday in California and
yeah.
That's just, it's got to stop.
What do you want your legacy to be?
I think first and foremost, it'd be that I was a good husband and a good father and a good family member. Second, I think it would be that I helped people. I mean, it sounds a little cheesy, but I think help people accomplish their dreams. If they want to build a business and something we did help them get there, I would feel eternally grateful about that.
Where do you find inspiration?
Other people. I'm an extrovert.
Okay.
I think I find inspiration in non-obvious places, and I tend to notice things that other people sort of walk by and don't pay attention to. And in talking to other people, I was in venture capital for a little while, and my favorite part of that role was hearing all of these great ideas walk in the door because it created mind space for me to think about things differently.
What is one book you think every dreamer should read?
I'm a big fan of like productivity hacks and Ari Maizel and I think his book is called Less Doing. That was also the name of his business. And it's just about how to be efficient with your time, how to outsource things that you don't need to be doing. I think it's really practical. There are really practical tools about how you can create processes and time so you can focus.
How do you define success?
I think it's really personal. And so I think it's, you know, it's creating, I think it's where your life meets your expectations. And that might sound a little bit trivial, but I think if you're expecting to be a billionaire and you've made $10 million, you might not feel successful. If you set expectations for yourself and meet them and they create the lifestyle for you that you want, and you can really celebrate that, I think that's success.
What is one trend you're currently excited about?
I don't know what I'm currently, I mean, I'm excited about all sorts of things, but I think I'm excited about how tech companies are disrupting old school consumer businesses. And just in speaking a different language and really valuing a consumer experience are giving some of the big guys a real run for their money.
What is one habit you find helpful in your life?
Exercise. And it's not something I've done my whole life, but as I've gotten older, it's the best. Obviously, it's good for me physically, but it's also the best source for helping with any kind of stress and mental struggles.
What is one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
That time is not never ending. You know, when I was a teenager and in my early 20s with my first businesses, I had this feeling of I could do this for, not that I was slow, but it felt like I could do this in a week, I could do this in a month, I could do this in a year. Like, what's the problem? I mean, I have forever, so to speak. And I think if I took that, if I thought of that a little bit more differently and have a stronger sense of urgency, I would have given up on some things more quickly and leaned in other directions more quickly. And I wish I had done that. Because as you get older, your risk profile changes dramatically. And so it's harder to try, you know, to try other things.
If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what do you think you'd be doing?
I don't know. There's a lot of doctors in my family. That seemed like a logical act.
I'm glad you didn't go that route. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing for sure.
I think so.
What is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
I don't know, because I'm kind of the guy who, like, if I want to do something, I try to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
Not that, like, life is so incredible for me, but I'm not unhappy. You know, I'd like to see my kids grow up and be strong, confident, curious, you know, good citizens of the world. That's probably my biggest dream.
As we wrap up today's show, we always like to leave our guests have a final thought. What's your final thought for all of us listening today?
I think where we started, this idea, the concept that idle ideas don't fly, I think is critical. If you have an idea and you're thinking about building something, like, get up off your ass and try it. There's a good chance you will fail, but it will empower you to be more successful the next time, until one of them works. And I think if you have that ultimate level of what I see as determination, just about anything is surmountable.
Aaron, thanks so much for taking time in. I know you are a super busy guy and really appreciate you sharing your story, sharing the story of Propelify, and giving us some great insights into the world of innovation.
I really appreciate the time and hopefully help some people out.
Once again, we want to thank Aaron Price for taking time out and being on the show. You can connect with him and check out what he's doing through the New Jersey Tech Council at njtc.org or by propelify.com. My big takeaway for today's show is very simple. We talked about this common thread of community, whether it was through the meetup that Aaron started or the New Jersey Tech Council or Propelify. That common thread of community was a superpower in the journey of ideas, innovation, and of entrepreneurship. No matter your dream or idea, when you're in community, things get easier. You have the encouragement, you have the knowledge base, you have the challenge to your dream and idea by others, by their experience, by their knowledge, by their worldview. Things that you may not see or understand or know, they can shed light on it. I would really challenge you today, whether you're in a big urban center or you're in a small town, find a community of people around you that can help be that support. Other people like you who have big ideas and dreams. And of course, you can always join the community of JumbleThink by joining our Facebook page, our newsletter, or other outlets. Now it's your turn. How are you going to take and turn those dreams and ideas into reality? What are the steps that you're willing to take over the next couple of days? We believe you were created for something awesome, so take a small step, a big step. Well, it doesn't matter the size of the step. Just take a step forward in making those dreams and ideas a reality. The world needs you more than ever, so dream big and change the world around you.
En arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois. Lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.